This is the Nigel Noon Show, hour two of the program. You're very welcome along. The bingo number is coming up shortly, but before we go to them, we'll take a few of your comments. Caller says, in yesterday's news coverage about the inquest into Private Rooney's death, why were the legal people referred to as lawyers? Surely solicitors is the proper name this side of the Atlantic. Yes, indeed, solicitor is the term we would normally use. Sometimes if you have a word appearing three times in the same sentence, you'll just use a different word just to change it up, and it could well have been in that context. I did the report myself, and certainly in one of the situations we had sort of, you know, solicitor, solicitor, solicitor coming up all the time, so we just used the word lawyer because they are interchangeable, and it is quite clear what the word means, and you will use the word just to change things up so that you haven't got the same word three times in two sentences. Earlier a caller asked about plantation, and a caller says, now I'm presuming, and I'm going to make a presumption with this text, I'm presuming the sign for percent is missing. It says Amsterdam 56 migrants, The Hague 50. I'm going to presume that should be 56% migrants. So caller is saying Amsterdam 56% migrants, The Hague 58% migrants, Rotterdam almost 60% migrants. The conclusion being the Dutch population are already outnumbered in the majority of their cities. Same in London, 54% migrants, and yet they call themselves minorities. Brussels is 70% migrants, a major majority. So yes, replacement is happening, and all European countries are following suit. That's the claim of a caller. I lost a ring in Kernan's Eurospar in Donegal Town between 8 and 10:30. It's a diamond engagement ring. So if anyone can help there, Martina has lost a ring in Kernan's Eurospar in Donegal Town between 8 and 10:30. It's, now I'm wondering if that's from yesterday, because obviously it isn't 10:30 yet, so that may well be from yesterday. If you can help, please do. The government has supported their propaganda machine. RTE can do whatever they want and squander public money, so says a caller. Caller asks, can you ask Councillor McLafferty next time he's on if there's any truth to the rumour he will rejoin Fine Gael and run in the upcoming general election? We have asked Councillor McLafferty those two questions, and he says to both questions, absolutely not. He is not joining Fine Gael, and he is not running in the next general election. That's the response we've had from Councillor McLafferty. Caller says, the amount of people I'm chatting to every day that have stopped coming to Letterkenny to shop because of the traffic is unreal. I would have to agree it's become a complete disaster. They have the town destroyed with traffic lights. With regards to our conversation earlier with Ben, Fianna Fáil has met the needs of the people over this past few years. He says, well, obviously, he doesn't live in a defective block-affected house. The government's repeatedly ignored the Irish people, and I will be both praying and strongly advising anyone that would listen that a new party comes in and get the same old parties out for once and for all. The country is in a complete mess and full of civil unrest. Another council says Irish Water stroke Ishge Éireann is a disgrace. One hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. If you call them, you get nowhere. They can't even issue a bill correctly. And another caller says, can you please ask your man what difference there is between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? They're both the same, just different faces leading them. Well, I did actually put it to him that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael very much would share huge policy platforms, and there's more that is similar than there is that is different, but he said they are two very distinct parties with two very distinct identities. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. You can contact us, call 0749125000. Shannon and Caroline taking your calls, 00353742500 if you're outside of the dialing area. You can use our social media. It's at Highland Radio on X. It's Highland Hub on Facebook. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086-6025000. Please do. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio, 16 minutes past 10 o'clock. You'll have heard in the news this morning that criminal barristers are again withdrawing their services nationwide in the third of 3 days of withdrawal this month. The final day of action is taking place today, and it is taking place in a number of courts across the country, including the court in Buncrana. We're joined by two barristers in Donegal on Zoom, Patricia McCollum and Damien Crawford, to give them their full titles, Patricia McCollum BL and Damien Crawford BL. Both of you very welcome indeed.
Good morning, Donal. And yes, you're joining us from Buncrana, where we are staging our protest today. And the tagline for this protest is Fair is Fair. And it's in circumstances where we have, in real terms, undertook a 40% reduction in our fees. And we are seeking restoration of our fees in line with all other of the court services personnel For example, the court registrars, the judges, and everyone has had their pay restored since the cuts in 2008 and 2009. And maybe just to put in real terms, Donal, what those cuts were, we underwent an 8% pay cut in 2008, a subsequent 8% pay cut in 2009, and then a further 10% pay cut in 2010. And as you know, obviously we are in inflationary times, and the position now is that we are in real terms 40% behind all other civil servants in respect of this pay for the work that we do.
And Damien, there is a perception among people that barristers are hugely paid individuals. They're all filthy rich. The reality on the ground for most barristers in this country is anything but.
Very interesting, Donal. We feel, some of us feel, that what we're actually battling here is exactly that perception, and the reality in all walks of life rarely meets the perception of it. This isn't a thing that's happened recently. I'm on practice a long time, and I've never seen action like this taken. And you can take it, and your listeners can take it. This is 10 or 12 years in the making. For barristers to withdraw services is absolutely unique. It started earlier this year, but the driving force behind it, it's gotten to a point where the profession is being damaged. If you want someone to either prosecute or defend your serious crime, your murder, your rape, your organized crime, those people need to be joining the profession now, and in 10 or 12 years' time, they will be there to be that pool of expertise. And we find we're losing them. After 5 or 6 years, most people who join the criminal bar find that it's not viable, and that's due to these cuts. And as an aside, I would make the view that in society at the minute, the two things you're not allowed to do, and for good reasons, is to be prejudiced against someone or to discriminate against them. And that thought, that sentiment that barristers are filthy rich, is, to my mind, being used by people as a means of discriminating against us. I think two government ministers have declared that the restoration of these fees is fair and is warranted. And the Bar Council has also negotiated upgrades in efficiency and returns. And I think since 2018, it's been agreed by all parties in government, it seems to us, that this is justified and warranted, and it just hasn't happened. So your listeners can take it as quite unique to see people like ourselves stand. And I agree with you, people say, what's them boys doing standing out there? But I can take it. It's very unusual to see it. But it's only because it's a 10-year crisis in the making, and this is as where it's led us.
Yes.
Yes, please continue, Patricia.
Yes, Donal, just maybe to just set out, that this process started in 2016, so we really are almost a decade into negotiating with the government in relation to the restoration of our pay. We're extremely frustrated that this is the action that we're having to take, but we feel that there is no other way now. In particular, Minister McEntee has herself conceded that there's no good reason why those in the legal profession are left waiting for crisis era reductions to be restored, while public and civil servants have had their pay restored. And I mean, there is just absolutely no justification for it. We are being told that we simply must wait until the next budget, and we cannot see why that is the case. And as I say, we're extremely frustrated. This is a highly unusual action for barristers to have to take, but we feel that we've been forced into this position.
As you said, the Bar Council has been negotiating with government. Is there any indication coming that the sentiments of individual ministers, the comments that ministers are making, that the belief of many in Leinster House and elsewhere that your claim is justified, that that's going to be translated into action and into actual agreement and delivery?
Well, don't like that. That's the real point of frustration. This has been agreed now for several years, and there's agreement to set up a body to review the entire structure of fee levels for the courts generally. And that hasn't been happening. They've just been completely stalled. So the view that this is going to be something that's going to come into the budget, to my mind, is kicking the can down the road again. Again, this is not a recent thing. This is 10 years in the making, and it's going to lead, as time goes on, to similar events like this, which is where none of us want to be.
Do you think there's a possible we'll get further escalation? Because obviously there were individual days taken previously. This is the final day of action in this phase. If there is to be a next phase, is it going to escalate further?
Well, you can take it that action taken by barristers generally is measured and considered, and we're mindful not to interrupt what are very important days in anyone's life. So the profession generally is very aware of that. But we're in a situation where we appear to have no other options available. And if that is the position, then that is in the hands of others. The frustrating thing is the people we're talking to all seem to agree this is correct,
yep.
But it's just not happening. So this appears to be necessary action to move things forward. Hopefully there won't be any need for a further appearance like us, albeit a lovely sunny day in Buncrana. But in any event, that we'll have to wait and see what that develops into, but it can't be ruled out.
We also
I think the position is that the ball is now in the government's court in respect of this issue.
We also read in the Irish Times this morning that the wider court service is underfunded and believes it's going to be even more underfunded into the future. We know certainly, and you're in a show, and there's a big campaign to get the Carndonagh Courthouse back up and running again, being led by a local councillor and others. And we see calls for more improvements to court buildings, for more investment in the court service over the years. And it raises the question, is the court service in itself underfunded as well as the pay issue that you're facing, and does there need to be maybe a wider look at the entire funding of the court service? And the question to be asked, is the court service running as efficiently as it could?
That's a viable point, and over the years the construction of court venues in Donegal has been a feature. Places like Carndonagh, I remember sitting in Fulcara in different places, and that's been sort of centralised in Letterkenny. But in the district court particularly, justice is expected to be available locally and in the communities where people live. And I wouldn't disagree that the funding generally of the court system is something that's a live issue and tends to get concentrated in the bigger towns and the bigger cities. But certainly in a county like Donegal, given the geographical spread, it makes every sense to see those being properly funded and brought up to speed.
And the bottom line is, when it comes to your profession, anyone who is accused of a serious crime has the right to be defended to the best possible extent in a court. It's a service that's provided by yourselves. It's an integral part of the court system. And your argument is that given the amount of time you've got to train to be able to do it, given the level of expertise that you have as practicing criminal barristers, that needs to be reflected in the wage you're receiving. And it also needs to be restored in terms of what you've lost over the past 14 years and longer.
Well, I think it's worth as a yardstick, Donald. We're currently on the rates that were in place in 2004. So if someone's been paid a 50 or 100 pounds for doing something in 2004 and still being paid that level today, I mean, one of our colleagues kicked off part of this discussion by showing a receipt he had for getting his suit dry cleaned. And he was getting paid less for a day in the district court as a barrister and then it cost him to have his suit dry cleaned. And that's the level of silliness this has descended to. And people would not believe that you could get a barrister to act for you for the day for just over 50 euro in the district court. And again, nobody's going to cry into their milk over the head of barristers complaining about things like this. But the reality is you can't get new people into a profession and you can't sustain any profession regardless of what you're doing. You take any line of work that anybody's in, that's the difficulty you're going to have. It's not sustainable. And that's the motivator behind where we're coming from. And people who are in the practice a long time, have probably other avenues of practice to work on. But there's an entire cadre of, very good, very bright people leaving the profession and haven't been now for 7 or 8 years. So we have to take a step to call this to public attention and invite public support. It may seem unusual, to do that. But most of the people here in Buncrana are now based in County Donegal. When I started out, there was only one or two of us. So the profession is local, and there are people who had no previous connection with the law, but have chosen it as a profession. And, for example, the Atlantic Technical University now has legal courses as well. So the profession is becoming more known in the county, and it's people of the county who are involved in the demonstration this morning.
Patricia, final question to yourself. Damien's already pointed out that this is unusual. I've been doing this job for 34 years. I don't recall ever covering any such action by barristers previously in the past. Do you believe this is a watershed in terms of barristers making a clear statement of intent to government that says, look, we've been speaking for long enough, now we're taking action, now the ball's in your court and it's time for you to actually deliver. The time for talking is over, the time for reviews is over, now is the time for actual action.
Yes, absolutely, Donal. And the difficulty is that we engaged in all of the processes. We met with the government. We did everything that we could in order to not take us to this point. And again, I emphasise that it's with a good deal of frustration, and it is with regret that we are here today having to do this. But when you have a Minister for Justice saying that there's no good reason, but then not restoring the pay, there really is no other option open to us in those circumstances. And we've simply had to take this action that we've taken today.
Patricia McCollum, BL, and Damien Crawford, BL, both criminal barristers in Donegal. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning from...
Thank you, Donal.
Thanks, Donal.
Thank you indeed. And that's the situation there, Patricia and Damien, there outside the court in Buncrana. And I certainly have never seen barristers in full court regalia outside a court protesting in that manner. And look, all I can say is if I were being paid today what I was being paid 20 years ago in 2004, it would not be sustainable. The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We're asked to wish Mark Wallace and Gráinne McKeever from Trimmer and Letterkenny all the very best and love today on their wedding day. And that comes from Alicia, Liam and Jack, and so say all of us, Mark and Gráinne, getting married today. All the best to you. Caller asking, will McGrory's Brae on Route to Donegal Town have a climbing lane as well as a cycling lane? It is a desperate area and it's in need of a climbing lane, particularly in the winter. A number of comments coming in with regards to our discussion with the two barristers there. Caller saying, amazing those barristers can survive a 40% pay cut. Are they drawing job seekers as well? Another caller saying, anyone that's been unfortunate enough to need one of those barristers would be amazed to hear they're underpaid. It costs thousands just to see one. Caller asking, how much per hour do barristers get? I think it's going to depend on the nature of the case and whether it's a public case or a private case. Another caller saying, no sympathy for the barristers. Many, especially in the High Court, demand €10,000 in fees before they even get inside the court. And yeah, and Damien Crawford did acknowledge that, look, it's one of those cases where people will know from coverage of inquiries and coverage of tribunals and so on and so forth that there appear to be some people in the legal profession who get paid thousands and thousands of euro just for getting up in the morning. The reality of a barrister who is working in the public system defending people publicly in a criminal court locally in Donegal is very, very different. And I think part of the problem is it's like, for instance, if you take footballers and you say, oh yeah, footballers get paid hundreds of thousands of euro every week. Not if you play for Finn Harps or Sligo Rovers or Derry City, you don't. And that's the reality of it. It's a bit like we're talking about footballers and we're talking about the conditions of people who play for Finn Harps, but we're imposing on them a perception that they earn the same as somebody who is playing for Man City, when patently they don't. Now, we're going to go to line one, and there is a debate over the mandatory teaching of religion in schools, and we're told that parents are losing faith in the practice. We're joined online by David Graham, who is the PRO of Education Equality Ireland. David, you're meeting the minister today as part of a campaign to have faith teaching moved to a class outside of school hours.
Yes, well, to be clear, we're actually meeting Minister Hildegard Nocton. We're not meeting Minister Foley, although we have made extensive efforts to contact Minister Foley and to arrange a meeting, and we do hope that a meeting will be forthcoming in the weeks and months ahead. But yes, Education Equality has been campaigning since 2015 for the separation of religious instruction from the state curriculum. Effectively, what we're suggesting is that instead of religious instruction, by which I mean faith formation or sacramental preparation and religious worship, instead of integrating that into the core curriculum on a kind of nominally opt-out basis, which clearly doesn't work, because pushing children to the back of the classroom with a colouring book doesn't really help anyone. Instead of that approach, we're suggesting that these classes should be moved outside core school hours, probably to the end of the school day, on an opt-in basis, so that parents who do wish to raise their children in a particular faith have that option outside of the curriculum.
The idea over the past number of years was that the teaching of religion would move from just the teaching of a Catholic catechism, which is what I would have grown up with, to the teaching of religion, as in, this is Christianity, this is Islam, this is Judaism, this is Hinduism, this is Buddhism, and that it would be more teaching about religion than teaching people to be religious, if that makes sense. That hasn't really worked in your view.
Well, that isn't exactly the picture. Certainly, you're quite right that it's important to deconflate those two approaches to religion. I don't think that there's any reasonable commentator in this space, certainly no parents that I'm aware of, who have any objection to their children learning about different religions and beliefs as part of a holistic education. And indeed, there's a set of guidelines called the Toledo Guiding Principles, which set out an approach that should be taken by states to the teaching about religions. And those guidelines state, in simple terms, that religion, teaching about religions should be in an objective, critical and pluralistic manner that doesn't give priority or prominence to any one particular belief or religious worldview. That's very, very different, however, from teaching religion as truth. In other words, teaching one particular religion as truth. And a simple way to illustrate that would be by saying, if I were to say that Christians believe that Jesus was the Son of God, I can be said to be educating the children because that's what Christians believe. However, if I teach children as fact, Jesus is the Son of God or was the Son of God or is the Son of God. In other words, he's still alive. And I'm presenting that uncritically as truth. Well, then I've crossed the line from education into faith formation, or perhaps I would use the term religious indoctrination. In other words, presenting beliefs uncritically that are faith-based rather than fact-based. I think it's important to make that distinction. And currently what happens in the vast majority of Irish primary schools is that all children, and I mean literally almost all children in the vast majority of schools, are required to receive religious faith formation or religious indoctrination. So even if their parents attempt to exercise their right under the Constitution to remove their children from these classes, all that happens in practice is that those children remain within the classroom. Often they will be moved to the back of the classroom and they will be given some sort of, you know, colouring or busy work to do. They continue to absorb the instruction regardless. And indeed, it's important in this context to remember the teachers as well, who are obliged to teach these lessons irrespective of their own personal beliefs. So I think the education system really, we have a 19th century education system that is failing to meet the needs and the legitimate and lawful expectations of a 21st century society.
We have a growing tradition of Educate Together schools in this country, a very successful one in Letterkenny. The model is growing across the country and there is talk of taking some schools which have been Catholic schools and effectively turning them into Educate Together schools and having a fundamental change in those schools' constitution. From your point of view, that process isn't happening fast enough.
I would even go further than that. Not only is the process not happening fast enough, but it's fundamentally unsound as an approach to education. It's simply not a credible or realistic approach to the growing diversity within Irish society. If we look at the figures just very briefly, I mean, the government has a target supposedly of reaching 400 multi-denominational schools by 2030, and they're kind of sticking to that line. Now, currently we have, depending on who you believe, we've somewhere between 150 and 170 schools that are multi-denominational, and we're kind of divesting or reconfiguring maybe two schools a year, one or two schools a year on average. So by our calculations, it will be 2173. That's a year, by the way, or 2171, I should say. That's the year 2171 at the current rate of divestment before we reach the government's target. And here's the kicker. That's not even the kicker. The kicker is that even if we do reach that target of 400 schools, that still only equates to 12% of our national primary school network. Now, by comparison, if we look at the recent census, well, it's from about 2.5 years ago now, that census showed that well over 1 million people don't identify as belonging to any religion at all. And indeed, only half of younger adults from 25 to 29 identify as Catholic, 53%. To be precise, that figure is almost certainly going to drop below 50% in the next census in 2027. So look, I could kind of quote figures and facts at you all day, but the bottom line is that Irish society is changing much faster than we can change our education system through a kind of piecemeal divestment process. It's simply not working.
The counter-argument to that has come from a listener who is coming, I presume, from a religious perspective. The caller says, morning, Donald. The Catholic religion has always been taught in Irish schools. If you live in Dubai or any other country, you live by their rules. You don't change the rules to suit people who don't like it.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, these are the kind of arguments that are trotted out again and again. We have an Instagram campaign at the moment. Any of your listeners who's on Instagram can check us out at Education Equality Ireland. That's Education Equality Ireland on Instagram. And you will find teachers from Dubai writing into us, explaining to us that even their children who want to receive Muslim faith formation do so on an opt-in basis. So even in some of these countries, it isn't treated necessarily as the norm. In any event, what your listener is also factually incorrect on their first point by stating that religious instruction has always been integrated into education. In fact, the religious integrated curriculum, whereby the religious ethos of the school permeates the entire school day, has only actually come in relatively recently. So our education system began in the 1830s, and it's only since the 1970s that religious instruction has been integrated into the education system. In any event, Irish society has clearly changed very dramatically, and I would suggest that if parents want to raise their children in a particular religious tradition, that's their right. But religion is a choice. It's not an obligation. And where parents do wish to raise their children in a particular religious faith, be that Catholicism or any other faith, that does require at least some nominal effort on their part. It shouldn't simply entirely be left to the school so that parents only have to kind of rock up in their best rig-outs for communion day and otherwise never set foot in the church. I don't think that's a reasonable approach to be taking. What we're suggesting simply is that parents might have to collect their children a little bit later from school. I don't think it's too much to ask.
The other problem, of course, is that traditionally over the years, in many, many cases, we had a situation where the schools were started by the Catholic Church, run by the Catholic Church. The teachers were Catholic brothers, Catholic nuns, Catholic priests. And it isn't as though there was a religious ethos or a Catholic ethos in the school. The school was Catholic, and that permeated through every element of that school. And that was the case right through the 20th century and into the 21st. And maybe what needs to be done is a more of a discussion and an honest discussion about how the state and the church reconfigure that. Does the state take over more church schools? Because at the moment, certainly in Donegal, if you ask people to name five national schools in Donegal, the chances are most of them are going to have saints' names.
Yeah, no, that's true. And clearly there's a historical legacy there. But, I mean, I think our group, what we're interested in is looking forward and not looking to the past. I mean, the fact is, you're up there in Donegal, you're only across the border from Northern Ireland. Who knows, in 10 years' time, we might have an all-Ireland republic or some other form of national jurisdiction with the border having been removed. Now, I'd ask your listeners to consider seriously this. Imagine if you have a teacher, for argument's sake, currently living in Portadown, who is from a Protestant or Presbyterian background, and the border is gone in 10 years' time. Should they not feel free to move to the former Republic of Ireland and continue to teach without necessarily being expected to teach Catholicism as truth? You know, I mean, there's very important questions really to be answered here by government, and they have failed spectacularly to address this issue. Indeed, the only real proposal in the programme for government that was of any interest really to us was the proposal to hold a citizens' assembly on the future of education. We need to have a national conversation about the role of religion in schools. As to your question as to whether or not the state should take a greater role in the delivery of education and take over control of more schools, I would just remind you yet again, like, we have spent 13 years trying to do this, and it's gone absolutely nowhere. We've tried that approach for 13 years. The forum on patronage and pluralism in the primary sector began in 2011. We're now 2024, and the resulting process that came out of that forum has had a statistically insignificant impact on our education system. 95% of Irish primary schools remain under religious control and effectively ignore Article 44.2.4 of the Constitution, which sets out a constitutional right for all children to attend any publicly funded school without attending religious instruction. So whatever historical, you know, anecdotes you might want to quote, let's not forget that the Constitution in 1937 provided for an explicit constitutional right for all children to attend any publicly funded school without attending religious instruction. Ireland has changed, and our society has changed. Our schools must change too.
David, I know you're preparing for a meeting with the Minister later today, so thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's certainly food for thought. We're going to get more perspectives on this particular issue in just a few moments. Right, we were discussing before the break, David and Equality Education Ireland's call for the teaching of religion in schools to be moved to out-of-school hours. Joined on the line by Mary, who takes a contrary view. Mary, good morning.
I think that in Catholic schools, a Catholic religion should be taught in Catholic schools, not other religions.
Do you accept David's argument that there is a difference between teaching somebody about religions as an act of education, telling them what various religions believe, and teaching somebody a religion in a way that says that particular religion is correct?
Well, I think that every school is different, and there are a Catholic school, a Protestant school, a Presbyterian school, an Islamic, and all like this. And every school should have their own religion instead of mixing up religion and one in the school. Because, you know, I send my children to school, and I'm a Catholic, I send my children to school. Well, I wouldn't like them, my children, to be sitting there listening to the teacher teaching them about Hindus and Islamics and all like this. I wouldn't like that. I would take my children out of the school if that was going on in the school.
But isn't it important that your children understand what other people believe, that we understand the Muslim religion, that we understand the Jewish religion, that we understand where they're coming from, we understand their beliefs? And is that not something that's going to help maybe understand better the world that we live in? Because part of the problem I think we have at the moment is you tend to get these extreme views from people who don't understand anybody else. Surely teaching people about other religions will help them understand other religions.
Well, it's about, you know, we bother teaching our own children our own religion without teaching them about other religions. But I know everybody has respect for all religions. But I don't think that'd be fair on a child going into school and them having to listen to other religious teachings.
But isn't there a difference between religious teachings and information about religions? I mean, we teach them about history, we teach them about geography, we teach them about silt in rivers, we teach them about oxbow lakes and things. I mean, is there much difference between giving children an understanding of the formation of mountains and an understanding of the formation of a religion like Islam and the life of Muhammad and how Islam was formed and what Muslims believe, and that maybe with that foundation and with that understanding, it may make relations better into the future?
I'm just wondering, would Islam, would they be all right for Catholic going into their schools and teaching their religion, the Catholic religion, in their places? How would that work?
Well, I would like to think. I would like to think that children in a Muslim faith-based school would be taught about the rudiments of Christianity and would have an understanding of Christianity and would have an understanding of what that religion meant. I mean, and one would hope that everybody would understand everybody else.
I don't know about that, Donald, but I'm just thinking of what I think myself about my children going to school, our Catholic school, and I wouldn't like them to be sitting there in there listening to about other religions. They go to this Catholic school to be teaching their own religion, their own faith.
Mary, and that is your view to which you're entitled. Mary, thank you very much indeed for speaking to
all
us
right,
today.
All right, thank you, John.
Joined by John, who I think has a similar view. John, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I
don't have a similar view. I have a bit of a kind of a difference to that. I don't agree, unfortunately, with what you're saying in terms of only teaching Catholics Christianity and stuff like that. I don't agree with that. Kids and nowadays, especially the world that we're living in, we're very, very we're able to explore the world so much easier now than we did maybe so many years ago. But I think it's very good to educate, especially younger generation that's growing up. You're going to be hoping they're going to be traveling, for example, and seeing a bit of the world. And I think it's very important to understand other religions out there and not having this assumption that you're the only religion that's there. I think the most important thing is belief. You need to have belief in something, in my opinion. The reason why I say that, the part that's very sad is Ireland used to be a really, really Christianity country. It was a phenomenal Christianity. It's lost that now. It's very, very sad. We have lost there are loads of holy wee places dotted all over the whole of Ireland. In particular, you have Knock. Knock is incredible. I believe Knock cured me in so many ways without going into depth. And I met a family the last time I was in Knock last year down at the Nervina, and they were over from America with their daughter, hoping for the cure. And for me, that was fantastic to think people had made this journey to our country hoping for a cure for their daughter. As something phenomenal, as something just beautiful. But unfortunately for the people of Ireland, we're losing that. For example, I hope you don't mind me saying this, we're losing the whole fact is most of our people now are only going to the, as you would say, the big games. They're only going to Mass, for example. Oh, we need to get the weighing crescent. Oh, we need to go to the First Communion. We need a confirmation. But other than that, majority of people are not opening the door, especially with their children. And for me, this is very, very sad. They'll turn up for the big days and sometimes even only turn up for the big games, for example, Easter and Christmas and stuff like that. I say mm-hmm. big games, I mean like as in the big masses.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we have a lot of different diversities of people in our country now. And I think we do have to move with the times. But as far as Christianity's gone, I think Ireland, unfortunately, we're losing it every single day. When you hear this nonsense of them then and all this LGBTQ nonsense and all this stuff that's been drummed into kids, well, I think it's only right to educate people and educate them properly for what is right out there in the world, whether it's Catholic, whether it's Protestant, whether it's Hindu, Muslim. I think I would rather educate them on that than telling them, oh, it's okay for you to identify as a cat because you're normal now. You know what I mean?
In fairness, John, and I'm going to have to say this, in fairness, it's one thing to, I mean, the they, them is a different, I mean, but to just dismiss LGBTQI concerns as nonsense, I think, I mean, you know, there are people who are of that community, and to them it's anything but nonsense.
No. Yes, I agree with that, but I don't think it's something that should be drummed into our children at schools. Having transvestites in our nurseries teaching, no way, that should be all. That, oh my God, I'd rather have every single religion in the world that have a transvestite standing in a classroom teaching my child.
Do I take it you mean the word transgender rather than transvestite? Because they're two very, very different words.
Yes, very much so. My point is.
But John, as long as the person, teaching the children is teaching them properly and is a good teacher, does it matter whether they're transgender? Does it matter if they're gay? Does it matter if they're man, woman? Does it matter if they're black, white? What you want is a teacher who's going to teach your children, and what they may be or what their identity may be is neither here nor there, surely.
I don't know. That's the one that's a hard one to answer. All I'll say is I was brought up with Catholic education. And what I have witnessed as I'm getting older and seeing the church and seeing how littler and littler the crowds have become, less and less children even going to Mass, and it's actually very, very sad. But yet, no, you go on social media and your TikToks and they're all jumping about doing things for me that are very inappropriate. And they're following this sort of a path that's been drummed into them as right and normal when they're lost in their fact of their religion. And without belief in something, you have nothing. And I always maintain that, you know what I mean? If you don't have a belief, no matter whether it's a Hindu, whatever you believe in, I think that's so important for you to have that belief in that and for you to look upon that God and pray to that God. But to have nothing and to think that this woke situation on social media is normal, oh my God, I fear for the future generation of all religions in terms of how scary the world's becoming for the younger generation growing up. And you know what's even sadder? Like, for example, I don't think, you talk about, that lady was saying about Catholic schools should only teach Catholics. I think the way Ireland's going, I don't think it will be allowed to fly the Irish flag in the next 15, 20 years because of the whole EU nonsense. We're going to be seen as an EU country, and it'll be an EU flag. We're losing our identity, and that's the part that's very, very sad. We are losing our identity as Irish.
I don't know. I honestly cannot see a situation develop in an EU context where the tricolour will be put to one side. I really cannot see that.
I don't think any government that supported that would be supported.
I don't see it.
Every other flag should not be allowed to be flown. If you're moving to this country and you're looking for refuge in this country, the only flag that should be up should be the green, white and gold.
But does that mean, I mean, what about people in the US who will fly the tricolour in the US and in the UK or wherever, and they will display their tricolours proudly because that's their heritage? I mean, Irish abroad have kept Irish heritage alive in countries all over the world. Should we not afford people that come same right to reflect their culture as the Irish have in every country of this, in every corner of the earth?
I personally don't think so, no. I think whatever country you're emigrating to and you're looking for support and help for them for your life and your future, I think you should obey by their flag and obey by their rules. And I think that should be across the board, across the world.
You absolutely obey their rules and you absolutely go by their laws and so on and so forth. But I think you also surely reflect your own culture and maintain your own culture. John, it's been an interesting conversation and thank you very much indeed for
Thank you very much.
Thank you indeed, John. You take care.
Thank you very much.
That's John. Headlines with Michaela coming up very shortly. Before those, we'll take a short break.